Welcome back, everybody. Rain on your parade with J.L. Covan, or should I say John Lewis McBrien. That's McBrien, not McBride. Duh. And here, as always, on that very pleasant intro with producer Mike. Hello, producer Mike.
Welcome to the show, everybody. It's going to be a fun week, isn't it?
It is. It's a short week. It's Thanksgiving. What are you doing for Thanksgiving, Mike?
I'm going home to New Jersey. I'll be with my parents and my sisters.
Skylar Gray.
And you just can't help yourself. Huh?
What?
Just like the Elvid is in the building.
I'm coming home. Come on!
It's the classic JL, ask someone a question and then talk over them when they answer it.
Okay, now, some of us want to quit comedy, some of us have. The people who are still in the trenches, I'm sorry that Steph Curry's going to shoot, JL's going to joke. Yes,
but it's not the equivalent of Steph Curry shooting. It's the equivalent of like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar just like blocking his own team's shots before they go into the basket.
Well, I'll take it. He's a legend. He's a legend, and you know it.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, that's what I'm doing. For
I missed that. You're going home?
Yes, and then
did you miss it?
Yeah, I'm going to. I'll be at my parents' place, and I'll be hanging out with my sisters. And I think that I don't know. My mom bought tickets to see Wicked. I don't know if I'm invited to the. I don't know if I got one with. I don't know if they knew when I was coming out. But that's on my slate for this week as well, nice. Hopefully.
Yeah, weird. Ariana Grande playing Ice Cube. I didn't see that coming. Gotta know your 90s rap, folks, if you're going to listen to this show. Well, I am. It's going to be me, Laura, and our two moms and Cookie.
Beautiful.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's you just start to have these shrinking tables, and it's
wow.
Like, geez.
Yeah.
It's but it'll be fun. Laura's doing the cooking, so that's nice. And I ordered a pumpkin cheesecake from Anthony's Cheesecake in Bloomfield, New Jersey.
Anthony's. Whoa. Laura's Italian, right?
Half.
So she can cook?
Yeah, she makes nice stuff.
Good. Okay.
What's funny with Laura, she's half Irish, half Italian. I'm like, you know, I would have taken the Mediterranean look.
Yeah.
Or I would have taken the blue eyes, pale skin, freckles look. Instead, I just got white. Just white. And I was like, how did you mix together and come whiter than like both?
Is she Northern Italian?
I don't know. No, she said her father, like, I don't know where her father was from. I think somewhat Southern, definitely not Northern.
I mean, the people from the South are the ones that left because it was such a toilet.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Anyway, no, we love Laura. We love Cookie. She took Cookie to the vet today. Cookie's either got dental issues or anxiety. Might be anxiety. Mike just made a face like, well, with you, I'm guessing anxiety.
Maybe it's PTSD.
It could be. She's heard. You want to talk about a creature that's heard too much of me talking about comedy. My favorite thing that Cookie does is when I start when I curse or I get excited during sports, she interprets those the same as like sort of danger to avoid. But when I talk comedy, the tone I use while talking comedy, it's this apparently the same tone as when I'm cursing because mm-hmm. she gets up and leaves the room when I'm talking about comedy. I'm like, that's a good clue. The dog is giving me like comedy gives you the same feeling as things that make you incredibly angry.
Right.
Even though I'm not cursing and doing those things. Dogs are very perceptive.
Yeah. I've noticed the same thing that Cookie has noticed as well. So,
but I will say this, that she hates it that I'm working out of the house now. I think that's what's giving her anxiety. All jokes aside, since you want it to be my presence that's bothering her. It's actually my absence, Mike. It's actually my absence that's making Cookie very upset. So that'll be Thanksgiving. So happy Thanksgiving to all of you whenever you're listening to this or watching it. But I saw two movies this weekend, Mike.
Yeah, there's a lot out right now. I mean, we're moving into the holiday season. It's movie time. One of the movie times of year.
I should say I saw two movies and 48 cell phones. That's what going to the movies now is.
Yeah.
And I think you'll appreciate this restraint because at Wicked, it was, you know, like most theaters in America, it was about 70% women.
Yeah.
72%, I think, was the ticket sales.
It's got to be less than that because there's got to be at least 25 to 30% gay men.
No, but 25% still allows 72%. That could still be 72% women.
So 72% women, 20-something percent gay men.
And by weight, 3% me. So And it was just cell phones everywhere. And I leaned over to Laura and I said, you know, if I just screamed out, put your fucking phones away, I think I could terrify most of the people in this theater. But it was just cell phones everywhere. But I got over it, except this one woman in front of me who was like, she was a mom. And I said, there is no hope for the future if the old moms taking their daughters to the movies are the ones demonstrating the worst social behavior. The kids, it's like, hey, daughter, I mean, obviously your dad's doing something right because mom's a real twat. Oh, hey, I'm sorry. I'm listening to Rogan now. I'm a real alpha bro. But I saw Gladiator 2 and I saw Wicked. Which one do you want to discuss first, Mike?
Gladiator 2.
Okay. Gladiator 2 is a great movie. I yes. love Gladiator. Yes. And no disrespect to Paul Mescal, the star of, he's a fine actor. He's an up and coming guy in Hollywood, Oscar nominee already. He's no Russell. I mean, Russell Crowe in Gladiator is
perfect.
The peak of yeah. Russell Crowe. It's LeBron James 2013 season. It's Michael Jordan, whatever, 1996.
Yeah.
Russell Crowe, peak Russell Crowe. And he makes what is already a cool movie. He gives it the gravitas, the substance that makes it more than just an awesome summer movie.
Yeah.
This is a good movie. I enjoyed it. There was a gentleman in front of me who tweeted and checked scores for, I'd say, 40 minutes. And I'm not literally 40 minutes of the 2 hours and 10 minutes. But it's not great. It's very hard to follow up, you know, a movie like that without Russell Crowe, like without yes. somebody of that standing centering it. Now, Denzel Washington.
It's almost as if they shouldn't have made it.
Almost. Now, I think they acquitted themselves fine. It's not like, why'd you do that? That stunk. It's more like, why'd you do it if it wasn't going to be great? And that's a tougher thing to say no yeah. to. It's like, we still made a good movie. Denzel Washington is, thank God this movie didn't come out before the election or black men really would have abandoned the Democrats. It's like under Trump, Denzel wouldn't have been zesty. He wouldn't have been all bisexual up in there. That's Democrats. They're taking our icons and turning them into, you know, I don't know. Yeah. I don't have a problem with, but like, why Denzel? Trump. So thank God it didn't come out or it might have impacted the election in uh-huh. a bad way.
Right.
But he's just eating up the scenery and like he's having fun. I like the fact that even though he's being sort of Denzel and sort of not, that he just clearly took the role and was like, I like Ridley Scott. I think I like the script. I'm going to get to do something that I don't normally do. I'm going to play a little out of character.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, it's like a B. I'd be like, well done. Gladiator's an A.
Right.
So that's sort of the problem. Now, Wicked.
Yeah.
Next night I see Wicked. And I was so fired up, I bought a commemorative tin for the popcorn, really to film a sketch as Trump after Wicked.
Of course.
Where he complained about he knew the Wicked Witch was suspect, that her green makeup was covering up something, namely that she's a black. But Wicked is excellent.
Yeah.
And I never saw the musical, but I will
tell Really?
Yeah, really.
Oh, wow. The musical's great.
I can imagine. But I instead saw Avenue Q because I hang out with winners.
Mm.
But after seeing the movie, now I haven't seen Wicked, but Avenue Q, cute story, probably shouldn't have pulled off like the biggest upset in Tony history.
They beat Wicked?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I was going to say, Wicked's still running. Avenue yeah. Q, as far as I know, is not, I don't think.
It
is
was it? Playing at like this smaller theater on 50th and 9th for a long time.
It's not the Winter Garden, though, baby.
No, no. So Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo, both A+. Ariana Grande, like, she kind of looks like an actual Disney princess. And I mean that both as a compliment and an insult. Like, there's something about her. I'm like, is she a real person? Like, have we invented, like, it's like, can you make, like, if the guys from Weird Science, old movie, Mike, sorry.
I know the movie.
If they were like, instead of wanting Kelly LeBrock, they were like, can you just make like a Disney princess into a real person? And Ariana Grande would come out.
Mm-hmm.
Insane talent packed into her 80 pounds of
yeah.
body.
Yeah.
big voice, really funny. And she showed it on SNL. I wasn't taken totally by surprise, but really, really great. And Cynthia Erivo, they both have their funny parts and everything, but Cynthia Erivo is like, they're two parts of the same half, and she's a little more of the dramatic stuff, but still humor, and the whimsy and the humor is more Ariana Grande's part. And we see Ariana Grande's current lover, the man that she's...
SpongeBob.
Is that... Okay, so yeah. Somebody said he's the voice of SpongeBob.
He's the SpongeBob on Broadway, or SpongeBob, whatever show they were doing. Broadway,
because yeah. If he had SpongeBob SquarePants cartoon money, I'd be like, now I get it.
No, he's not the guy that originated the SpongeBob voice.
No, I figured he's too young to be that, but it would make more sense.
Yeah.
But as I said, as Trump, to get away with it, I said, Ariana Grande seems to have a type, and that type is not attractive. But we were just watching this movie, and it's so odd because this character is lusting after Ariana Grande's character.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm guessing this guy's wife is not going to go see Wicked, his ex-wife.
Yeah. Well, his ex-wife was...
she's hanging out with John Mulaney's ex-wife right now, plotting murders.
His ex-wife was, I think, also a Broadway actress.
Oh, okay.
I think. I remember this was like a scandal, though, when it happened, because Ariana Grande, like, home-wrecked this situation.
Yeah. But you know what? At the time, I was like, you're disgusting, Ariana Grande. But after seeing her on SNL and in Wicked, I'm like, forgiven.
Yeah, you're back on.
You know, train. Sometimes there's talent. There's talent that you just go, hey, lady, tough. Here's the problem. When an Ariana Grande sets her sights on a ginger troll, she's going to get them.
Yeah.
Like, she's not even trying.
Yeah.
Like, she's not even, like, she's like, I'm going to go from Pete Davidson, the, you know, body like Tayshaun Prince, face like a methadone clinic. And I'm going to go from that to, like, 5'5" ginger Pete Davidson.
Yeah.
When, I'm sorry, that's like me going, like, I'm playing basketball today against a fourth grade class of amputees.
Yeah.
I think I'm gonna wreck shop.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only thing I don't respect about Ariana. It's like, play up to your game. I laughed at Ariana Grande. I got goosebumps from some of Cynthia Erivo's singing. So I guess I'm trans now, is my point. Big announcement that might hurt the candidacy.
Well.
Speaking of trans, I love the fact that I don't think we talked about this last week. I don't know if it had happened yet, but they're going to ban the trans congresswoman from using the women's bathroom in Congress.
Ugh.
Because, you know, Mike, it's about protecting the kids.
Right, 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 right.
You know, all those children
in Congress.
In Congress. You know, but... It's a really enjoyable movie. Congress. Yeah, that was just a little thing that I pointed out to people where it was like, wow, I guess it isn't about protecting the kids. All along, it was about hate. Mm-hmm. And nobody cares because we've basically decided, and I got to get this out of the way before I start really doing official campaign events. But man, has this country decided that, yeah, it's the trans kids that are expendable. Like, that's the problem. Like, we're going to pin. And I wondered what would happen after abortion went away. Like, after that was decided, after conservatives won the issue, basically, with the Supreme Court. Well, they just lost their biggest cultural weapon. Mm-hmm. Anything else will pale in comparison. But they're so desperate for a cultural weapon, they turn this tiny thing. You ever... ask a conservative or a libertarian on their podcast about an issue that matters to black people or women or something. And they will, the data. And they'll have the numbers. Like, you know what percentage of black men actually get shot by the cops? It's minuscule. So this is actually a bullshit issue. Why are we talking about it? You know how many trans kids are trying to play high school sports? I'm guessing it's even less.
Yes.
But that one, the data, no. This is about kids. This is about our future. This is about the world.
Yeah.
So they've managed, and this is pointing out this hypocrisy in ways that people can understand is going to be sort of my mission in writing and on this show in many ways for the next year mm-hmm. plus. Because there's these things where you go, yeah, they will data you to death. Ben Shapiro will facts don't care about your feelings you to death when it's an issue that his side is like pushing back on. You know, like they lose if there's somehow sympathy for, like, they're just, it's just data. They just only care about data. But with trans kids, I don't know the data, but I just can't imagine it's that many.
It can't be.
It can't be. And yet it was enough of a cultural issue. And I had somebody say to me in the comments, and some are nicely, but like, you know, it was more than that, JL. It was this, that, and the other. And I'm like, then why were those ads the ones they were running up until the election? Why were those the most impactful ads? The ones you brought to my attention first. The Trump cares, Kamala cares about they, them. Trump cares about you.
Yeah.
Well, we know Trump doesn't care about you.
Yeah.
So it's really just the they, them part.
But that really was like the, you know how you look back through history and there's always like the, was it?
Well, trans people are like the I'm sorry to be blunt, like they're like the Jews of America right now in terms of,
yeah,
we can blow them out of proportion and scare and be like, look at what they're doing to our kids. Look at, and it's insane. We're going to look back at this. If we still have books and a country, we're going to look back at this and be like, wait, so in 2016, Hillary Clinton didn't go to Wisconsin. That's what you're telling me made Trump president. And in 2024, it was trans kids swimming that the country just said, enough, done, we're done. So, yeah, I'm sorry.
So I was just going to say that there's famous ads throughout the history of elections. Obviously, the bomb, the LBJ ad.
Oh, yeah, Daisy? That's the Daisy ad.
The Daisy ad. And there was also Morning in America, the Reagan ad.
Willie Horton.
The they-them ad is going to be the one.
Yeah.
I mean, I already can't remember anything, any other ads from that campaign, but that they-them ad will be in my brain.
Yes.
Forever.
You brought it to my attention, and I said on the show, I was like, ooh, I know it's steeped in hate.
Yeah.
There's no denying that's a great, whoever came up with that, it's a great ad.
100%.
It's a great slogan. It's a great, it's tight. Yep. It summarizes and augments the real issues that people have. Yep. And
it sums up that election.
His ads in the week leading up to the election weren't like inflation and Trump is going to save the day. It was like trans kids.
Yep.
As I do a George Carlin voice to trans kids.
Trans kids in a plane.
Who the fuck cares? Trans kids. I'd be worried if there was a transformer teaching my kid, but a trans kid, who fucking cares? But we're going to get into, this is going to be, we're in election season. We're in JL election season now. It's 24/7, 365. Yeah. So we have a topic today that I've lined up because I think it's fundamental. It's got to be something that me or whichever Democrat wins, if I am not the winner of the 2028 primary season, that they make central to their case, basically. And we'll get to it after the break. But like educating people, we are stuck. Democrats are stuck with the role of taking care of people, educating people, not being too bad or too annoying. It's all on Democrats. And I think we've fallen short in emphasizing the simplicity of why people need to get elected, because we've gotten to this point. The country was founded, you know, Congress was really supposed to be the main power because they were rejecting a king. So that's why the legislative branch is the first article.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they'd made the executive the first article, it's like, oh, so this is like our king. And that's how people thought of it until Washington was like, yeah, I'm stepping down voluntarily,
mm-hmm,
and created that tradition that lasted till 2020. And I forget what happened then, but who really, I mean, big whoop. So
all seems to be forgiven, by the way.
Right. Oh yeah.
Investigation closed.
It's you know, it's water under the graves of dead police officers. But they people kind of have this idea that the president is now like the law and the party. And so it's like when the president is seen as failing or succeeding, it's like, well, they're doing a great job.
Right.
And we got to stick with the party because we view now the president as this bigger figure than they really should be.
Yeah.
I get one. And because we gravitate to strong leaders, whether it's cults or sports or politics, we gravitate to a figure of leadership. Even if we say we don't, we do. And so that's why the presidency has just morphed into a bigger and bigger thing. But it takes more than that. The design of the system, how we perceive the system, is not how the system was designed. the system was designed for the legislature to kind of be the leaders, if you will. Mm-hmm. So we'll get to that. But I want that to be teaching people the basics of government seems like something we shouldn't have to do. But we need somebody who can make it fun, who can make it entertaining and important. You know what I mean? Like, we're, so we'll get to that after the break. But just a couple things, if I may, Mike, can I just do some housekeeping before we go to a nice, relatively early break?
Not as early as you think.
Not as early as you want.
Not as early as you think.
No, I'm looking at my phone. It is as early as I think. It's exactly what I think because I'm looking at the time.
Okay.
Thank you. The next segment will be 4 minutes, everybody. We're going
to... I'm not rushing. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I'm Ukrainian, so... Yes. See? No, you know what? Sometimes I just got to go flick. I have some shows coming up. I know you hate that when I talk about those, but... Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, December 13th and 14th. I'm in somewhere in Pennsylvania for New Year's Eve near Harrisburg. So a lot of MAGA country for me. But, you know, they feel good right now. That's the right thing. They feel good. So I can dance like, you know, like somebody entertaining Joffrey in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, or like Sound of Music. Like you're a Von Trapp.
I never saw Sound of Music. Oh, isn't that bad?
My God. Well, yeah. Anyway, the whole point of that movie is that they're like in occupied Austria. And there he's the father is like a high up important person, I guess, in the Austrian government, maybe. And Austria gets invaded. And now the Von Trapps, the singing Von Trapp family, has to perform for the Nazis.
You could call it Von Trapp music.
Yes. OK, back to whatever you were doing. I basically just did that so you could take a drink of water and would not have dead air.
And then, let's see, January, I'm somewhere. February, I'm in Charlotte. At the end of February, I'll be in Charlotte with the Black Guy Who Tips live show. I think I'm going to be in Vegas the end of March. Just these are things to keep keep your eye out for. And then there might be some shows, some Trump shows, in the South. We're still working on those to promote Dictator for a Day, which should be coming out January 6th is the goal to release that.
Oh, great.
The Deuce, finally, is loose.
Prime?
I don't know. No idea.
So where are you guys releasing it?
It might be like on just pay platforms.
Okay. All right.
No, I'm saying like just the way, you know. Bug, just the way the like Half Blackface was first on multiple platforms where you could rent it or buy it and then it started streaming on Amazon Prime. I don't know, though. That's above my pay grade. I'm just simply the talent that made the show work. Obviously, join the Patreon. A lot of Patreon. I'm really liking the engagement and the subscription growth on Patreon. And everybody, I'll just say it this once. Just one time, if you indulge me, Mike. Half Blackface on Amazon Prime. Go watch it. Go give it a nice review. Please. Enjoy it. I still get messages from people saying, I just watched this. So... it does kind of, I don't know why, but there is this sort of, I'll get to it. Well, it's been out for a long time now.
Yeah.
It's been free for like 7 months.
Been talking about it for a while.
Yeah. And I'll be, don't you worry, because I think I'm going to film one, in the spring. So look out, Mike. A whole new thing to bother my fans about. But anyway, folks, we're going to talk civics. We're going to talk moving this country forward. And who better to teach the country than an entertaining, passionate lawyer comedian. And no, it's not Greg Giraldo because he's dead. See you after the break. And we're back, Mike. How was that break?
Satisfying.
Okay, good. Yeah. Not your favorite break.
Not my favorite break, but... a break nonetheless.
Okay, good, good. We always, we aim to please here. All right. So I've been sitting at my desk really racking and really absorbing how big an undertaking even contemplating a run like this is, because I get into those spirals where I'm like, all right, here are my three issues. But what if I get asked about foreign affairs or how many countries I've traveled to or this or that? And I think, obviously, I want to lean into my everyday working man, average American sort of like, yeah, no, I haven't taken tons of vacations everywhere. I think a lot more people can relate to me than people who vacation off the south of France. So, you know, so anyway, But I thought there's got to be something more fundamental, because I'm looking up books on certain policies that I'm interested in. Like I said, elder care, climate change, homelessness are sort of the three things. Now, homelessness would be more of a how do we allocate funds to places in need? But also homelessness is one of those opportunities, like I said before the break, where I could point out the hypocrisy of both sides, where it's like, oh, you want the NIMBY. You want homelessness taken care of, but not in your area. And you want homelessness taken care of, but not in a real way. You just want it to disappear, mm-hmm. you know? And I think those would be the three issues that I sort of care about. And obviously, elder care and climate change would be things that are of a more national, you know, national setting. Mm-hmm. But anyway, but before all that, and I was like, before I get to name and slogans and all these things that I'm trying to think of to sort of build this from the ground up, putting together my bio, I've already figured out how I'm going to write this presidential memoir that I was suggesting last week, which yeah. is it's going to be, I'm going to lean into the comedy experience of traveling the country, of interacting with different people, and like lessons for America from the road by a comedian you've never heard of. That's not the title, but that's the gist of it. You know, it might just come off as like this nice, authentic, wow, this is really thoughtful and funny, but also real. Yeah. That's, you know, that's I think the way I'm going to approach that. But before all that, I realized, I think one of the big problems we face, and it's up to a leading candidate to find a way to do this, because it does, the Democrats always have a heavier burden, I think. Republicans are the party of no. They're the party of appealing to your worse angels, to borrow Abe Lincoln. Like, and that's kind of an easier job. What do you hate? Who do you not like? Can't everything be simple? Don't you want everything to be a simple solution? And I have simple phrases. They, them, you.
Right.
Very easy, very digestible, very impactful.
Put it on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's actually, we will be selling those t-shirts as part of our campaign merch. But I thought to myself, I don't think people really understand how government works, even on basic levels that I take for granted. And I think something that, and it could be me, Mike, could be me, has to give to the American people almost on not a daily basis, but whenever you're speaking, you know, and Kamala Harris ran into this where it was like, you're speaking with your canned talking points, but it's like, but you don't get it. You're seeing me on TV 7 times, but there's plenty of people who have never seen me. So they're going to get the canned speech to a certain degree, because they have to get some of those basic things. If you're a news junkie, it'll look like I'm a Teddy Ruxpin and you're just pulling the string and I'm saying the same things. Mm-hmm. But something I think Democrats have to incorporate now, starting now, is real lessons in how government works for people. Because as I said before the break, we sort of view the presidency as like, that's our leader. That's the he's the guy. Or girl. Just kidding. Guy. He's the guy who tells us what to do. He, as the country goes, you know, he gets credit or he gets blamed. And then his party gets blamed for whatever he has done poorly or well. And I think that, as I said before, that's our need, I think, to have a strong leader, to gravitate towards a leader, a captain, or whatever. And we need to sort of kind of take a step back from that, I think, a little bit, and realize that as much power as the presidency has, and those things will be weakened. The Supreme Court, whether you like it or not, in Chevron, you know, the executive branch is going to have a lot less sort of power to wield in terms of deciding what agencies do and things like this. And this is all this is like already too in the weeds for the average American, you know, saying, but you don't understand, the agencies don't have, it's got to be simpler than that. I think people need to start campaigning. Like I want a presidential candidate who gets up there and is saying, I am, I don't even know if leader is the right way to say it, but like leader, but I am part of a team. And that team, don't even make it Democrats, Republicans. That team is Congress. That team is the Senate. That team is the House of Representatives and the presidency, the executive. and you've got to give me, you know, LeBron James. Oops, too woke. Pick somebody else. But you get, I'll just athlete of fairly non-political, even
Judge,
Tiger Woods.
Aaron Judge.
Aaron, wow, does he say nothing?
Yeah. Is he big enough for this example?
Baseball, no, our podcast just tanked. You brought in baseball.
Sorry.
Because I was thinking like Tiger Woods.
Uh-huh.
Or pick a race car driver. Have a few athletes. Let Jon Stewart mock you for having like different athletes in different regions.
Yeah.
Pick a popular race car driver. He's got a team. He's in the car driving, but he still needs a team.
Right.
If his team sucks, feel free to use that language, real American language. If his team sucks, if Bubba Wallace, or he's black, right?
I don't know who that is. It's a race car driver?
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. But basically, it's like if his team stinks, it almost doesn't matter how good a driver he is. We need, and I think by portraying the Senate and the House, don't even bring party into it, but say, I've told you what my vision is, but like any athlete, Michael Jordan's a great one. Michael Jordan didn't win championships until he got Scottie Pippen and Dennis Rodman. Dennis Rodman's like friends with Trump. You know, mm-hmm. So even the greats, and you don't want to, and I know this is like minutia that I'm doing, but like, don't call yourself a great.
Yeah.
But even people who've had success couldn't do it alone. And what I'm asking is we've got to understand that the president can do certain things, but the founders, you know how they love talking about the founders.
Mm-hmm.
The founders didn't intend for the presidency. Humility. How about humility from the president? I want to lead this government, but I don't want to be the government. I want people in the Senate, people in the House. We can disagree, but people who are overall focused on a mission of making America better, not dividing us. And I feel like positioning yourself as almost more of a coach than an MVP is maybe the way to sell the presidency to the American people, because they have to understand Congress makes the laws. In the Constitution, Congress is the first part. And these are things that people wouldn't be able to argue with, because, you know, they'll be like, you know, actually makes a good point. Like it's true.
Mm-hmm.
He maybe wants to get in there and have a more humble presidency and a more collaborative president. And then the first thing you do that they don't like, they're on cable news, but you're already president.
Right.
And they're going, oh, a complete betrayal of the country that he didn't wait for 40 Republican votes before passing it. It only passed 70 to 30. He didn't wait for those other Republicans to join him. Disgusting. But you're in the office now.
Right.
But I think we need people who are going to educate and speak in terms that Americans can understand, where it's like messaging and policy is one thing. But this is, I think, even bigger in terms of if you don't know how government works, or you don't appreciate how government works and how it's supposed to work, you will just look at the president and then say, oh, this guy promised me the world, even though he can't deliver it. I like that. And this guy promised me nothing, and I don't like that. We have to get people more realistic and educated about how government works. Not in the weeds. I don't expect them to start parsing Supreme Court opinions and understanding all the agency jargon and how that works. But I think we need a place where people can go, yeah, Congress is important too. And I want people... Let's say I want to split my ticket. I want somebody, I like this presidential candidate. I like what he's saying. I relate to him, and I think he's not talking down to me. Unless I listen to his old podcast and he calls me a dumb piece of shit. But I like how he's framing it. And he seems to be like somebody with a different mindset and approach to the presidency. It's not about him. And it's not about slogans. It's about like, let's get a government together that works. Let me be the leader of sorts of this government, but I am not the government. And I can't do 95% of the things that we need done without Congress. That doesn't necessarily mean vote for Republican or Democrat, but vote for somebody who is aligned with that sentiment. So if you see a Democrat you think is too... And I'm using Bernie or AOC, even though I don't think this is really the case. But if you think they're too firebrandy and not going to like come to the table enough, then don't vote for them. But you're going to see a lot more people on the right who are grandstanding and making it about them. And I don't care what state you're in, what your district is in. Those aren't people you should vote for, right or left. No grandstanders, no dividers. You know, obviously you're going to have principles and policies, but like, you need people who are going to work together. And I know this sounds hokier than I usually talk, but I think that message has to come through in terms of what kind of politicians you need for defining the mission differently. Not an I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to do this. Those days are over, at least for Democrats. I think you need to redefine the presidency in a way where it doesn't become about you have to vote for me or else, but I want to infuse the presidency with a little more humility. But if I'm going to do that, then you need to give me a Congress that is that approaches with a similar level of humility and collaborative motivation. And you know, you can point out the people, whether you find them entertaining or not, you can find the people who you go, this person is not that serious. I'm just voting for them because they're a Democrat or they're a Republican. And my bet would be more Republicans would fall under the guise of fire-throwing nonsense person.
Yes.
But yeah, if you couch it that way, if you give people permission to abandon either party for the sake of a greater mission and the mission that we should be on, I think you've made them understand that, oh, the president isn't everything. And if I want the president to do things, I need to vote in a senator and a congressperson who, at the very least, seems like they will cooperate or come to the table. In the very least. They won't always agree. But there have been, now my argument to bolster Democrats' case is what I've said before on this podcast, which is, you're looking at any big change. Do you like your Social Security? Do you like your Medicaid? Do you like your Medicare? Do you like your Affordable Care Act? Do you like the GI Bill? Do you like the loans you got to buy your house? Do you like pretty much everything that's good in your life? Democrats probably gave it to you. So that's the partisan side of the message, which is, here's why I would say you should support Democrats. But beyond that, here's why we need to get a type of person in office before we get to party. And my argument is, I think we will have more of those people if we vote Democrats. You can certainly disagree with me. But I think many of you will find that maybe your congressperson, you've supported them because they're a Republican and they have the R, but they may not actually embody the values we need to be good governors of our country. Not exact, you know, so that's, I think that would be my message. Any thoughts before I continue on this masterclass?
This is a JL heat check episode.
But like a nice heat check.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just saying, sitting back watching the show, baby.
Because what annoys me, and I'm going to bring up Scott Jennings on CNN. Hi, Mac. Basically, I think, you know what? Scott Jennings is like the meter. Have you ever heard him?
Scott Jennings?
Yeah.
I don't think. Maybe if I saw him.
He just has an expression like this. And you could see from January 6th until election night, Scott Jennings was a perfect barometer of the confidence of regular Republicans. So it was like he was always a smirking guy, like he always had in his back pocket that he was going to own you. After January 6th, it was like, this was not a good day. We know. But throughout the Biden presidency, he just kept smirking a little more. He got a little more confident. And by election night, of course, he was like talking about how Hulk Hogan should be made a senator from Florida. He was so confident. But Scott Jennings says one of these things that's very popular and hurt Kamala Harris a decent amount. And which is why it's on the Democrats, unfortunately. I'm one of the people who complains about how much burden is on the Democrats to help the country, but also educate the country, mm-hmm. but also not offend the country. Think of are any of those three things the responsibility of Donald Trump?
No.
You can't offend people? Fuck that. You've got to.
He's getting rid of the Board of Education. Oh, not the Board of Education. The Department of Education, yeah. Isn't he?
That's what he wants to do.
That's so insane.
And he's got Linda McMahon running it. Why not just say, make Vince McMahon? Why not just go why go half measures? Just make Vince. I'm going to shit on teachers, literally. But so I understand. I am annoyed that that burden exists. But one of the mottos that we had a couple weeks ago is like, we got to run for the, and you said this to me too. We got to run for the country we have.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm resistant to that. But one of the things we have is, hey, in this country, Democrats have to help, educate, and not offend, mm-hmm. not bother, not even offend, not bother, because the Republicans can offend and they're just being bold and free speech warriors, but Democrats annoy. And in yes. a way, on a human level, annoying is kind of worse than offensive.
Yeah.
Like, you find me annoying.
Only at an hour and 20 minutes.
Right. But you don't find me that offensive. And you can see when no. Mike really caves in towards the end of an episode, yeah. it's because he's annoyed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm so Democrats go. Have been sort of branded a little bit annoying, and we need to undo that. But you have to face facts that this is what the country is. And when somebody says, Democrats have been in the White House 12 of the last 16 years, to somebody who's not hyper-focused on how government works, they're like, yeah, what have they done? And then the question I'd say is, well, what did they do during the 4 years when they had majorities in the Senate and House? Affordable Care Act, Inflation Reduction Act, major things. Mm. Now, what I would say is, what you have to understand is, if you like those things and wonder why the Democrats didn't do more, you've got to give the Democrats better teammates. You've got to give them teammates that can help them achieve more for you. And that's when I would point out the historical lessons of FDR, LBJ, Barack Obama, Joe Biden. If you give them enough Democrats, big things happen. That's just a fact. We can have a chart. We can have commercials with clips of FDR and listing the things. It can be a 30-second, almost educational commercial where you're sort of rebranding the party of doing things. Ronald Reagan, a great communicator. If you read your history, not the greatest president. But he was all image and he presented well. But the meat and potatoes is on the side of the Democrats. But this requires more than Lincoln Project social media ads to fire up the base. We've got to start an education campaign. It would help if the schools did it. But now that the Department of Education is going and that Florida just eliminated like social sciences or something because it's got too much wokeness in it, I think we're headed to the point where commercials are going to have to be the new education. Or Joe Rogan podcast. He doesn't even do podcasts. She doesn't even appear on podcasts. I heard him say that 4 times in an episode. And we'll get to Rogan and Yellowstone when we do a really big
American episode.
American culture, yeah. White American culture episode, which is important because I don't want to be somebody who simply shits on things that I haven't listened to. I can do that sometimes. I want to actually understand and be like, this isn't so bad. Or and on my Patreon episode, if I can bring this up, Mike, I saw Yellowface last week.
Yeah.
Play with Daniel Day Kim. A lot of Asians in the audience. And it dawned on me. I said to Laura, I said, do you want to get out of here? But after I said that, because we were both uncomfortable, I'm kidding. I said, look, people like representation, but it's only when black people or gay people want representation that it's like, why is it gotta be all that?
Yeah.
Whereas Asians, you know, regardless of politics or anything, I've never seen that many Asians at a play before because it was an Asian story. It was centered on Asian culture and Asian issues. Plenty of non-Asians in the crowd as well. But I said, this is the thing. Whether it's Yellowstone or Yellowface, people like representation. And we've branded it to where when black people or immigrants or gay people or trans people want it, why is it always got to be that? Well, then why do you fucking beat off to Yellowstone every Sunday?
Well, even beyond
because
Yellowstone.
Because you like it. Because you want to feel there's a place. And this is a broader issue for me, and I'll let you talk. I'm sorry. But a broader issue for me is this idea of like people not, it's not even empathy because empathy can sound soft to some people.
Yeah.
It's understanding. It's like you like to see tough white cowboys because that's how you think of yourself. Just like black people might want to see a show centered on black characters or Asian people who go to the theater, who I don't see at the theater that often, buying expensive tickets to see Yellowface because they're interested in lots of stories, but deep down, they also want to hear their stories.
Yeah.
And we have to get to a point where it's no longer, and this is also, this is why it has to be, and my bit on hockey, I'm sorry, is so good that I was just watching from the set, but we have to get to a place, and it's on the Democrats. The theme of this is, all I'm saying is on the Democrats. It's a harsh reality. I don't think that's the way it should be, but this is the reality. to create an idea where people can say, representation is not wokeness. It's not woke when you tune into to Yellowstone. It's not woke when you go see Yellowface. It's not woke when you go to Morgan Whalen concerts. It's that's part of your culture. You like that. You might like other stuff too, but nobody's accusing you of you're like, oh, you got to go to Morgan Whalen. Why? Because he's a white guy. Is he like, white stuff? Why has it always got to be white? And we have to create a culture where people sort of admit the truth about themselves, but then say, that's kind of okay. It's okay to have an affinity for some of the things that relate to you easier, but it's not okay to treat other people's affinity as a crime or an offense against the state or the destruction of society. And so, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say that there's always this panic too, especially you see it in the movie industry or even beyond the movie industry. Hamilton is a good example where, do you remember when Hamilton came out and there was that casting call for, I guess the original cast was about to leave. So they were trying to get new people in. And the casting call was basically, didn't say it explicitly, I don't think, but it was basically like, we're looking for like Black and Hispanic people for these parts of like George Washington and founding fathers who were white guys. And there was sort of this like New York Post outcry where it was just sort of like, well, it's historically inaccurate and blah, 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 blah.
And of course, and that's ignoring the artistic message behind it.
Right. But again, this is the age old issue that's been happening with Hollywood since its onset. And the representation that's only come in the last 20 to 25 years. One of my favorite movies is Lawrence of Arabia. And that was made in 1962.
When I saw that movie, my barber said to me, older Puerto Rican gentleman in Riverdale.
Yeah.
I said, me and my brother kept looking at each other because we were like, is this, and I'm not using this derogatorily. I was like, is this gay? Not the movie, but
Lawrence of Arabia?
Yeah. I was like, is he gay?
I think he was.
No, and that's the thing. Yeah. So, but the movie was like weirdly avoiding it while strongly. There's a lot of eye contact and arm holding and like,
him and Omar Sharif.
Yeah, and we were just like, me and my brother were like, what's going on? Like, because it was confusing because they weren't doing it. They were just suggesting it. And my barber so eloquently and non-wokely said, oh, Lawrence Arabia, the movie? full GOT at the end of that one, the hard T. And in my head I was like, inappropriate but funny for later, funny for a story later.
But so it's a great example. It's this epic, one of the great blockbuster masterpieces of all time, and obviously T. Lawrence, the whole point is that he was a white Englishman that went out to unite the Arab tribes to fight against Turkey in World War One,
inspired a Billy Joel lyric.
And yes, and all of the main parts outside of Omar Sharif, who are supposed to be Arab princes and tribal princes of the Middle East, are played by white guys with prosthetics. You know, I mean, so the white people have had the power and the influence in mainstream, at least filmmaking, since its onset. There's always this panic when they're like, we're going to make James Bond black, or they're going to make like, what if Superman was black, or like, what if this character was a woman? And there's always this, just this, like, we don't need this DEI stuff. But it's exactly what you were saying. The representation, I don't understand why, you know, Bond can't be black. Like,
and,
like,
and to
that
me,
is
Bond
this
is
idea
one of the most
that's
obvious.
Like,
of course, Bond. Like, to me, it's not even like a, like, Idris Elba, not
Idris
sophisticated,
Elba would have crushed it.
Not elegant and sophisticated and sexy enough to be James Bond. And he's British on top of it.
Yeah.
You know, but like,
they would have done it 10 years ago. He would have been great.
And I will add to this, you know, before I get this back to the macro level, but I think if there was a theme to this part of my early campaign, it's that, hey, everybody likes representation.
Right.
And if Yellowstone's popular with some Montana guys and some MAGA guys, you know what? This is America. You get to have your entertainment.
Right.
And it's quality. I don't know if I love it. It's there's a lot invested in it. It's not some cheap piece of shit.
Because JL, there's always been dumb redneck fun stuff.
Yeah.
Like, how many Burt Reynolds movies are like masterpiece films? Not really any of them, I don't think. But it's just like, most of them are like dumb, fun, redneck movies. Sure. And he was an awesome movie star for that. Like that, there's probably less of that that gets made now just because of the way Hollywood is, and Hollywood is a lot more liberal. But like, I think honestly, I think that's one of the things that kind of like kept us united for a while. Everybody's going to like Smokey and the Bandit, but like, who's their core audience?
People like Dukes of Hazzard. Well, no, but I'm saying that's not that there was a time where and obviously I think one of the Dukes of Hazzard is like hardcore MAGA. So that that makes it feel worse, I think. Where it's like, oh, so you probably really loved the Confederate flag. That wasn't just part of the show.
There's them Duke boys getting in trouble again.
Sure. But I was going to say there was speaking of Broadway, there was this play that I wanted to see and it was called like the something something Comet. It had Josh Groban as the star. 10 nominations for Tonys. Tons of making tons of money. It was a huge success. And then Groban, as often happens, a star is not going to sit on the play. You know, either you're famous already and you don't want to be on Broadway forever, or you get famous and go, I got to go and take advantage of other opportunities. Right. And so they were casting, they cast Mandy Patinkin, a well-regarded musical theater guy, actor, white guy.
I am an Eagle Montoya. Well, Jewish guy.
Okay. For I believe white for the purposes of if we're breaking down, like if we have to categorize people by race.
Okay.
But the but then there was a backlash because they were saying it was the height of like, oh, they're taking this role. And I don't remember exactly, but it was there was rumor that it was going to be a black actor like this guy from Hamilton who was going to be in it. And then it was like, but Mandy Patinkin.
Which show is it? Do you remember?
If you look it up, Josh Groban musical, something in the Comet is in the title, but it was like, I don't know, 5 years ago, maybe. Mm-hmm. Big, big hit. But then what happened is Mandy Patinkin got word that like, he was like, I don't want to be part of, you know, and that, I don't want to be part of the problem, Mike.
Yeah.
And he backed out because he didn't want to be like, I don't think it's right if this was going to go to a black actor. But it was going to a famous actor. I think that was the goal.
Yeah.
It wasn't to squeeze out a black actor. It was to go to a famous actor. And then, you know, and I'm surprised if MAGA and the like didn't think theater was so gay, they would have brought this up as a perfect example of wokeness run amok.
The musical was Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812.
There it is. So this guy from Hamilton, who played Hercules Mulligan in the original cast, which I saw, by the way.
Nice.
He gets the role, but he wasn't as musically inclined as Groban. So they're like, fine, we'll adjust like instruments. Like you don't have to do that part, but it just, he wasn't the best fit and the show tanked and was done.
Yeah.
A runaway hit gone. Now that is an example of where I would say, I don't like using the term wokeness because like so many things now it's become this own ugly, like vague accusation of like, you know, and I'm also tired of hearing people talk about it in general. Like Bill Maher is one of these people who keeps he like resuscitates the dead horse and puts it on like a ventilator so he can kill it again.
Yes.
And so it's like, but there is this frozen area where some in the middle and on the right live where wokeness is still this. It's as bad as the day it was the worst.
Yeah.
And it's like, no. But you keep that in the media cycle. You keep, and people just keep going, wokeness, it's more wokeness. This idea of Donald Trump just got elected president. He won the Senate and the House. How much is wokeness winning right now?
No, but this is the thing. This is them taking it back, JL.
But they need to keep the boogeyman alive between trans kids and wokeness, the vague like ether that is wokeness that surrounds us and is always a threat to destroy us.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's kind of stupid at this point, except too many people still think it's like, I'm tired of the wokeness. Kamala Harris didn't even run on like a lot of the issues. She didn't run on identity politics. She actually avoided that, but it didn't stop people from going, I'm tired of all the identity politics. She's literally not running on identity. She has made a conscious decision to not run on identity politics. And yet it's still a powerful enough like slur to basically like tarnish Democrats. It's insane, which is why there needs to be this move, I think, to incorporate a completely new way of talking about politics and making the case that Democrats are the best way forward for this vision of collaboration and progress. And yes, you've got to draw some lines in the sand. I am very deeply uncomfortable with how people go, keep telling me. I blocked somebody on YouTube, I think a fan of the show, because they kept telling me trans sports is a losing issue. I'm like, when did Kamala Harris run on trans sports?
Right.
Like, you're just telling me what your problem is.
Right.
You know? And I'm not, I'm also not going to be somebody who sits here and goes, well, if my daughter was a high school junior and then a 6'4" muscular woman, although if you've ever seen East German swimmers in the 80s, it's pretty much they were biological women.
Mm-hmm.
They look bigger than me. I'm not going to lie and be like, well, you just have to swim harder, honey. I'm sure I'd have weird feelings about this. I also don't think the direction of the country should hinge. But also,
when is that going to happen? How often does that happen? That happens like once every now and then. And it's a story when it happens. Because I mean,
would you like to write a movie with me, a comedy about a trans, a woke trans immigrant serial killer?
I don't think so. I think okay. I could probably find other projects to work on,
All right.
It's just odd. When that first story came out years ago that I can remember that there was like a person who transitioned.
When I win the big award at Sundance, you will regret this.
Okay. Call me when it happens.
No, I won't. You'll have to read about it.
I remember it's probably almost a decade ago at this point where there was a story where it was just like this man has transitioned to a woman and is now powerlifting in the Olympics against. And I remember when that came out, I was like, all right, in fairness, just because of the body makeup, maybe this isn't very fair.
Right.
Did I predict that that would end up being a major issue for people and how they vote and how they sort of view the lens of the social change that's happening in the country? No. And I still think it's insane.
But it's
and even if it's one issue that you could be debated and come to a reasonable place and be like, all right, well, for these reasons, maybe this one thing amongst trans issues, maybe that could not be allowed. As opposed to, because that rolls down the hill and picks up the snow and becomes, well, trans people are mentally ill and trans people are blah, 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 blah. It becomes this thing that's so much bigger than like, well, if this person is 30 and they were 30, a man until they were 30, and now they want to play a physical contact sport with other women, that yes, you have transitioned and now you're a woman. Maybe that shouldn't be allowed. Should not be a national conversation of a total hypothetical,
right,
of things that haven't even happened yet.
And I think like what you just brought up, it's like when gun people don't want to budge an inch because they're afraid of a slippery slope and then you take my guns.
Right.
I think
it's the same thing.
It's the same thing, except it's more important because it's somebody's humanity.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, I want to play sports because if I let you not, and I think there's more evidence that this would be the case. If you don't let me play sports, then the next thing is you won't let me have this job.
Right.
And you won't let me live my life and take the medications that I take. Like, I think that's a much more reasonable fear than they're going to take our guns if we let them. If we have to have a 5-day waiting period.
Especially because you know the way that people voted, that the fucking country hates you.
Yes.
Like, you know. I mean, maybe we have gotten past certain base homophobia and I don't even know if that's true, but like the acceptance of gay marriage, like maybe that is something that we've kind of like moved on to.
I think the country has a
libertarian
acceptance of it, which is like, fine, do it.
As long as it's not my home, not my children.
Yeah. Just, it's like, fine. You know, legally it's fine. Do what you got to do.
Right.
But I like, this is one of those things where, And I've been writing some stuff.
It's just like, it's the new jacked up homophobia.
Yeah. And it's because you actually have some gay people who are have divided this line also of like, gays are not 100% united behind the trans community.
That's maybe, just a fact. Maybe not.
No, they're not.
Okay. Like,
no, I'm just saying.
I'm just saying, I don't know.
No, and I'm not acting like there's a civil war going on, but I'm saying it's not this 100% solidarity either. But I like, that was when you brought that up about like the country hates you. And this is one of these things that I'm trying to write, which is when white men especially felt like the country was catering too much to minorities and immigrants and gay people and wokeness, and they lost the presidency to an old white man with 50 years of government experience, but still, their guy lost. There was this real, and a black guy was president, even though he's a brilliant guy and charismatic and the American dream. There was this sense of like, oh my God, it's slipping away from us. I hate this feeling. And I'm not even saying this feeling wasn't real, but I don't think we can govern a country based on this sort of, you're taking my stuff, which was never your stuff attitude. But I say, imagine that feeling that your country's slipping away from you just because it's unfamiliar. Let's be nice. These are unfamiliar, confusing times. I'm putting it in the nicest terms possible.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if your country just fucking hated you.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, and you put yourself in the, like, this way of approaching trans people is like of such unvarnished, undisguised hate. Like, imagine that. And imagine instead of you being like one of the largest demographics in the country, commiserating with 45 million other brothers in distress, you were like 0.1% of the population, and people, had high rates of suicide. People were king. And I'm using the trans.
And there ain't another one of you in town.
Right. The trans issue is, and maybe it sounds like the trans issue is emblematic. It's just like a Supreme Court case. You bring a case that is the most extreme so that the law is good. You bring the case of if beating a confession out of somebody is unconstitutional, you don't bring a jaywalker in. You bring a child molester in. I'm sorry to bring that. You bring a guy who, if the law applies to him, then it applies.
Right.
That's called good case law, because then there's no ambiguity. You can't come back, well, you did it for the jaywalker, but this time he's a murderer. Can we beat it out of him? No, you bring the murderer, you bring the molester, and you say, this is now law.
Right.
And that's why I'm using the trans issue as a case, because, you know, whatever you do to the least of us, you do to me, Jesus Christ. And sorry to point that out to all the great Christians who support Trump, but that is the same sort of idea for our laws. The communities that are the most marginalized, however you treat them, that is how we treat people. So that's why I use that as a emblematic issue, because it's like, well, it's the simplest one to demonstrate. It might be the most extreme to some people, but it's also a very clear example that, you know, when rights are denied to these people, when they are treated like for committing no crimes, these are not child. These aren't people who've done horrible crimes that we hate. These are people that we are exhibiting such disgust for as people.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying everybody has to understand everything and every pronoun and understand all things scientific and psychological, but I do understand hate. And I see that. And so I bring, and there were some other things, but we gotta end this segment and do a quick comedy talk before we get out of here. But that's the way I think we need to start talking. Like I said, a sort of a message of collaboration, of maybe a more humble presidency, to emphasize the fact that it's not Superman or Superwoman, just kidding, Superman coming to the White House to save the day, that it's the Avengers, okay? The president might be Captain America, but without Thor, you know, without Iron Man, I guess without Black Panther, you don't have analogies, but that's government. Government is at its best collaborative. You either have to put great teammates in, or you have to come together, and hopefully you have both. But beyond that, that's, I think, the messaging. That's the messaging I'm going to bring, Mike, is breaking it down to explain government, how people have to seek the government they want. If they don't want government to do anything, we're doing a hell of a job already.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want government to make your lives better, rattle off all the democratic accomplishments with huge majorities over the last century, then we can do some things. And you break it down that way instead of saying Democrats, 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 say we need people like this. This is how government works. Here's my argument for why I think Democrats are the better option. But we can't sit at a table with people who don't want to move America ahead, who don't want to make people's lives better. If they just want to grandstand and fight, well, then it doesn't matter what party they are. That's no good. That's no bueno. So I would say little points, you know, along those lines, as it gets more into the weeds, get rid of the filibuster and explain why the filibuster is bullshit and how Democrats wanted to get rid of the filibuster to pass things for you, voting rights and police reform and things like that. And Republicans like the filibuster and are going to keep it, because they deep down know without a filibuster, we'll have to vote with Trump because it's either Trump or we're out of office with this voting pool. And then we're going to have to do some pretty heinous shit to keep our jobs. The filibuster is like a safety, is like a safety lock for Republicans. So it's protecting a bad president and stopping people from doing what the majority wants. So that would be one of my examples of like, we got to educate people a little bit on that in practical terms, not in sort of the filibuster is an anti-democratic institution that is antiquated and from a different era and it has to go. No, say the reason we couldn't give you this child tax credit is the filibuster. The reason we couldn't do this, the reason Republicans liked the filibuster is because they didn't want to do what Trump did. So MAGA voters, here's a lesson for you. You want a hardcore Trump presidency, you should want the filibuster gone. The filibuster stops what the voters want, whether you are Democrat or Republican. And that's another way to reach people. So that's my general gist on how we need to educate voters. But I think that's fundamental. I think that's got to permeate every speech, every commercial, every town hall that we do. So on that note, I got about 7 minutes before Mike goes full. I hate you, JL. So we're taking one more break before comedy talk. And we're back with comedy talk. And this is a real comedy talk today. I'm happy to be doing it, but I think I only speak for myself. Right, Mike?
Oh, I'm thrilled that it's back.
Oh, good. Well, the punchdown of the week, which people reference to me on social media. So it is something people like.
Okay.
Do you not like it?
I just, you know.
It's comedy. I get it. Yeah. So Elon Musk posted a picture of himself with like a sniper rifle.
Oh, I did see this and this made me laugh.
Well, thank you, Mike.
The joke.
Yeah. So I quote tweeted Elon Musk's picture and I said, and I'm going to do Tony Montana's voice because it'll make more sense. Say hello to I Wish I Had Friends.
Yeah, I did laugh. That got me. I laughed pretty hard.
I was really proud of that
one. Yeah, that one
because
that was
it hit
funny.
The beats. Yeah. It hit the beats.
Yep.
And that's as perfect. That's the best joke. This joke is so good. I posted it to like my YouTube page just as a picture.
Yeah.
And it's gotten a lot of interaction there. And I thought, you know what? That's probably the best joke I've written in like a month. Mm-hmm. That's funny. Well, somebody thought they could improve it. And that's why this is a classic punchdown of the week. Or kids that would talk to him. So, I wish I had friends becomes, or kids that would talk to him. Yeah, sometimes you can just let an A-plus joke sit there and luxuriate in the sunlight of even Mike Coscarelli laughing. But sometimes people think they gotta punch it up. And in the words of Colonel Nathan R. Jessup, I would rather you just say thank you and be on your way. Either way, I don't give a damn what punch downs you have. Did you order the code red? Anyway, sorry. And I watched a special, Mike.
Okay.
You know, I do that from time to time.
I do, yeah.
Next week, I'll probably review Anthony Jeselnik's, and I might even dust off my Anthony Jeselnik impression for that one.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you will.
I thought I had 7 minutes before the werewolf came out. Is it already, is the full moon already out?
We're at one, what are we at, 112?
Where the players dwell? Boy, did Mike hate that one. I watched The Skinny, Jim Gaffigan's new Hulu special. And I got to say, Jim Gaffigan, first of all, prolific as a motherfucker. And he hit a little lull for me. I'm saying I always good. But there was a point where I was late to the Jim Gaffigan game relatively because he started doing specials in like 99. Mm. Like late 2000s, I finally got into like watching. I bought a book of his. I laughed like a couple of his specials I thought were absolutely fucking hysterical. And then around, I think, Cinco, I think his fifth one, which was on Netflix, it was good. But it was starting to feel like, you know, like I've complained about a lot, like big time comics these days where it's like, I feel like you're now in a groove and the money's good. So you just keep hitting the same style, the same.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like you're doing new things.
Yeah.
Even if they're new jokes, it's kind of like AC/DC is like, you know, rock and roll. Right. 10 years later, we gotta rock.
rock. Yeah. 10 years later, I'm going to rock you. 10 years later, rocking all the way to the rock. 10 years later, we're rocking at our funerals. 10 years later, we're rocking in heaven. We're rocking in heaven. So,
Highway to Hell, you missed it.
On a highway to hell.
You know, I don't want to. I enjoy that band.
Rock and roll, rock and roll.
Yeah.
No, but I get it.
You get what I'm saying? Yeah. And I love your AC/DC. Yeah. I have no problem with them, but it's.
I'd see AC/DC today.
I think I read something they might go on tour.
I would totally go.
You want to go?
Yeah, I'd go.
I'll get you a ticket for a Christmas present.
I'm going, Jack.
Hey, man, AC/DC, come on, man.
Hey, rock, Jack.
You got a hat on. You put the hat on. But, yeah, the AC/DC, that's not a complaint. But yeah. I'm not going to say Rolling Stones, Beatles, Guns N' Roses. I got to put Guns N' Roses. I love Guns N' Roses.
I know.
They do their thing, and it's great, but that is their thing.
Yeah.
That is what they do. Rock and Roll Train, one of my favorite songs. Partly because it was like 28 years later and they were back doing just another rock.
Almost, I respect them more for just staying in that lane.
Right.
And just kicking ass for 50 years.
But comedy is not music. Like they have a sound, but comedy is not just that. So, and I've said it about a lot of 35 to 40 year old comics who are really at the peak of the game right now, where I go, you're really funny, but it's like, and you're just giving me, it's like more of that. And with comedy, it's a little different than music. Because you don't have a sound, you can have a style, but growth is kind of nice to see. So Gaffigan by Cinco, I was kind of like, okay, I'm getting Gaffigan. He's giving me Gaffigan. But then like 2 years ago or last year, he did a special I reviewed, Dark Pale, my number one special of last year, because it was like Gaffigan. He was not betraying his tone, his style, but there was like a little bit of edge, a little bit of darkness. It was like and it really was great. I really thought it was great. And I was impressed because I was like, this dude's in his late 50s and found another gear and found a like way to take his style and not abandon it, but really bring something new. And then this one, I would say I laughed a lot, but I think he's going back to just, you know, he vented. I think he vented a little bit with the last one, COVID related and things like that. And I think he made a decision to just be like, yeah, I don't have to vent. I'm going to do what I want to do. But it is really funny. And it's on Hulu, which is now getting into the stand-up special game. What annoys me about that, Mike, they're just going to have the same huge people, like Maniscalco, Bill Burr. They're just writing bigger checks because they're Disney.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I wish it was the point where some network or some streamer was like, we got to like find a way to be the people who discover or expose the new talent. But instead, it's just musical chairs with like, Maniscalco, $20 million.
Yeah.
All right, I'll do it for $20 million. I'll do it on Tubi. You give me $40 million. They put me on Tubi. Yeah. Mike, what the hell is a Tubi? Like, but I think it's at that point where they're just competing for the same big names. Like Gaffigan is he's the stand-up comic who cuts the ribbon on everybody's stand-up comedy foray. Mm-hmm. And it's a great compliment to him. It's like somebody really respected, really funny, and broad appeal. Because he fucking like started Amazon's foray into specials. He like they're self-producing. Now it's Hulu. So the next streamer that gets into stand-up specials, they're going to be like, can we back up the Brinks truck?
Criterion.
Yeah. The Gaffigan Criterion special. But I really did like The Skinny. I would recommend, though, go watch Dark Pale. And if you've never watched Gaffigan stuff, then no need to like go back to the beginning. Dark Pale and The Skinny will give you like, the two sides, the great specials, but I'm just commenting that it feels like Gaffigan. I don't mean this as a critique, but he seems to be like, okay, now I'm like kind of moving back into like where maybe more of my fans are comfortable, but it was really funny. So that's the review, I guess, guys. But thank you for listening. I hope you liked this podcast. I know the fans like the politics, but I'm really thinking about this like nonstop. So, it's very daunting, as you can imagine, to build a stand-up a political candidate from the ground up.
Yes.
Especially for the presidency. We're not going for like, you know, a city council or something. We're going right from the top.
Yeah.
So it's exhausting me, but I'm really putting it together. I lost no weight though this week, so on my superficial things, I didn't make improvements yet. Uh-huh. But Thanksgiving should help that.
Yep.
That's usually a great time to lose weight. Thank you. Get tickets to some shows. If I'm in your area, check out my albums, check out the specials. Leave 5 stars, please, for the podcast on iTunes and or Spotify, please. If you're listening right now or you're watching right now, just click on your computer or your phone. Go leave a review. And if you are listening, you guys have been doing a great job, as Mike always says, but it's true, of engaging with the YouTube and using that as our chat, as our discussion forum. It's working nicely. And as always, you know, if you really do like the show and you have friends who have similar tastes in politics or comedy or whatever, can't hurt to recommend it. If they don't take it up, they don't take it up. But maybe they'll like the show and you'll have something else to talk about. So thank you, everybody. I hope you are having a good Thanksgiving or whatever, or not getting trampled at stores during Black Friday. And I will see you next Thursday.